Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Especially grateful for the contributions of Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Minority Leader John Boehner, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, Minority Whip Roy Blunt, Chairman Barney Frank, Ranking Member Spencer Backus. By coming together on this legislation, we have acted boldly to help prevent the crisis on Wall Street.
And I really feel a great sense of responsibility for Rahm and for me and for many others. These are the days of awe. The days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for Jewish people. They are the days of awe, A-W-E.
O-R-E.
And we have a task that it's appropriate to contemplate in that context.
Thank you very much, Barney, for your enlightening remarks, your tremendous leadership. And if I may commend your just fabulous staff for their great work. Absolutely. On this legislation for the Financial Services Committee and on this
All of us had to put up with this terrible financial problem. They had to put up with the financial problem and me.
No comment.
Barney, that's what they mean by the period of awe.
I'm speechless. I never knew they were this bad. I knew they were corrupt. Okay. I knew that. I knew they were dipping in for themselves. I had no idea they were this stupid. Nor did I have any idea they were this hypocritical. Barney Frank is now a religious, Orthodox religious Jew. He's referring to a Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah as though that has something to do with him and has something to do with passing a bailout for his friends on Wall Street after he caused the crash. It's unbelievable to me. It gets worse by the day. He says the days of awe, A-W-E. What he really meant was the days of awe, O-R-E. Because these are certainly the days of awe for his friends on Wall Street. That's all I can tell you. Now, of course, I'm not writing a segment on The Sopranos, but if this was a segment on The Sopranos and you listen to Nancy Pelosi's crocodile laugh and Barney Frank's disgusting voice and Rahm Emanuel's synagogue jester voice, you'd call this segment the Days of Awe, O-R-E, because that's what it is. Now, my lead story for today, and it's on my website from CNN, CNN's website, it's on michaelsavage.com, tells you the whole story in a nutshell. While Nancy Pelosi is laughing, while Bonnie Frank is celebrating God's hand itself, a woman 90 shot herself inside her foreclosed home as brave sheriff's deputies try to throw her out of her foreclosed home in Ohio. That's right. The brave tax squad, geared up, suited up, no doubt with machine guns, went in and probably threatened to kill the old woman. Well, they just had to do their job. I mean, they didn't mean to do it. I mean, they had to go in with machine guns and get the 90-year-old woman. They didn't mean to hurt her, but they can't take too many chances after all. I mean, she could have been a gang leader. I mean, she might have been a gang leader, 80 Polk, 90 of Akron, even though she's been in the house all of her life. It doesn't prevent the fact from the danger that the tax squads have to face every day going after dangerous old women 90 years of age. So there it is. He hurried downstairs and let the deputies in. He said they told him they found Polk's car keys, pocketbook, and life insurance policy laid out neatly where they could be found, suggesting she intended to kill herself. And she shot herself. You see, in 04, Mrs. Polk took out a 30-year, 6.3% mortgage for $45,000 with a Countrywide Home Loan office in Cayuga Falls, Ohio. The same day, she also took out an $11,000 line of credit. You see all of those gangster shysters on TV? Refinance, take a refinance, take a refinance. Double refinance, take a refinance. Refi, hi-fi. Take another refi, hi-fi, refi. We'll screw you in the end and take your house away. I'm double refi, I'm hi-fi. Hi, I'm high. My name is High, and I'm going to refi you. Over the next couple of years, Polk missed payments on the 101-year-old home that she and her late husband purchased in 1970. In 2007, Fannie Mae assumed the mortgage and later filed for foreclosure. Now, let's stop right there. The gangsters and Fannie Mae should be in prison and all of their assets seized, and all of these little old ladies around America who've been foreclosed on Fannie Mae mortgages should get the money that was stolen from them by the gangsters and Fannie Mae. Deputies had tried to serve Polk's eviction notice more than 30 times before Wednesday's incident. She never came to the door, but the notes the deputies left would always disappear, so they knew she was inside an ambulatory, he said. The city is creating programs to help people keep their homes and so forth and so on. And that's the story. Here's a woman in the house since 1970. Old neighborhood, house couldn't be worth much, but they were going to throw her in the gutter. The deputies were only doing their job. They were only following orders. They didn't mean to. They were only following orders. I mean, Sieg Heil, they had to follow orders. And the orders, of course, came down from Bonnie Frank, came down from Fannie Mae, came down from Freddie Mac. They were only following orders, just as they'll only be following orders when they come to take your guns and whatever else they're going to come and take from you, because they will, as sure as I am sitting here. You mark my words, whether I'm in radio or not. You mark my words. We are all American cuckolds today, cheated on by our two-timing Republican Johns. Let me repeat that in case you want to write it down. We are all American cuckolds today, cheated on by our two-timing Republican Johns. We always expected socialism from degenerates on the left. We always knew Bonnie Frank was a no-good Nick. We always knew who Nancy Pelosi and that other creep Rahm Emanuel were. But did you expect something from the Republicans along the lines of what you voted for? Didn't you expect some kind of fiscal sanity, never mind fiscal conservatism? Well, we know who George Bush is. We've suspected him from day one. He was never trusted by conservatives, never. And he's proven our suspicions to be correct. But your own House of Representatives is now a house of ill repute. Your Senate is now fundamentally a cheating, lying spouse. The Republican Senate has cuckolded its core base today, primarily the Republicans. But the lead story is one that you should never forget, and that is Fannie Mae forgives loan for woman who shot herself. Isn't that nice? Oh, that's a new update? Isn't that nice? Company says it will return home to woman. Fannie Mae just said it will set aside the loan. Came out a minute ago while I was reading this. Fannie Mae said it will set aside the loan of a woman who shot herself, a sheriff's deputy tried to evict her from a foreclosed home. Now, if Fannie Mae could do this, what else could Fannie Mae do? I wonder. On Friday, Fannie Mae spokesmouth Brian Faith said the Mortgage Association had decided to halt action against Polk and sign the property outright to her. We're going to forgive whatever outstanding balance she had in the loan and give her the house, Faith said. Given the circumstances, we think it's appropriate. 90-year-old woman thrown out of her house because the thieves, the degenerate thieves at Fannie Mae, foreclosed on her. Now Fannie Mae just heard the show, and a second ago, they forgave the loan. They just forgave the loan, but you know what? I don't forgive Fannie Mae. Do you know who's on the board of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Oh, some of your most distinguished Americans. Do you know that even a former FBI director who's been suspiciously absent from the public for several years now? Oh, yeah, he had a nice job waiting for him at Fannie and Freddie. That's the way it works. Sure, and Bonnie's an upstanding man. He ran a house of ill repute for male prostitutes out of his apartment in Washington, and now he's talking about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for the Jewish people. It makes my flesh crawl when a low-life, degenerate vermin like him brings up the Jewish people. I'll tell you the truth, I squirm. I cringe when I hear a degenerate like Bonnie Frank reverting to this, of all people, to wrap himself in religion, of all the people to have done it. This low-life communist rat is the wrong one to do it. You want to know where anti-Semitism comes from? It comes from men like Representatives Barney Frank and Rahm Emanuel, in my opinion. 1-800-449-8255. I need some rock and roll right now because the take-home message is this. We are all American cuckolds today, cheated on by our two-timing Republican Johns. So why don't you play, well, you met someone. How about goody-goody? How about goody-goody? Because the Republicans apparently met somebody else, and that somebody else is not America. They're obviously answering to a higher authority.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone, and now you know how it feels.
All right, turn it off. I'm not even in the mood for music. I'm cold, sober, angry. My knuckles are white. I'm really in another state of mind. I'm beyond anger. I'm not even depressed. I'm beyond depression. Look, let me explain it to you. These rat-thieving crumb-bum, do you think they're bailing out the economy? You think they're bailing out the people who donated money to them? Answer. Don't even answer it. You know the answer to that. What proof do I have? The market went down today after they did the bailout. Notice when these bums were off for the Jewish holiday, the market went up. When Barney Frank shut his pudding mouth and disappeared for 2 days, the market shut up. When Barney Frank came back with his mud mouth, the market went down. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Thank you very much, Barney, for your enlightening remarks, your tremendous leadership, and if I may commend your just fabulous staff for their great work on this legislation for the Financial Services Committee and mine as well.
Citizen Kane, two hands clapping.
All of us had to put up with this terrible financial problem. They had to put up with the financial problem and me.
Oh, how self-effacing, Barney.
No comment.
My children, like stupid moronic children.
That's what they mean by the period of awe.
And laughter that I haven't heard since, like, game shows. So Fannie Mae forecloses on a 90-year-old woman in Ohio, and she shoots herself. Now let's see who's on the Fannie Mae board, past and present, and how much money they made. James A. Johnson, former chairman and CEO of Fannie Mae, was an aide to Vice President Walter Mondale, recently led Senator Barack Obama's vice presidential search team. Wow. Jamie Gorelick, Deputy Attorney General under Bill Clinton, former Defense Department General Counsel, member of the 9/11 Commission. Wherever there's a cover-up, there's old good old Jamie Gorelick, a woman you can count on. Franklin D. Raines, former Chairman and CEO, Budget Director under Bill Clinton. Thomas E. Donilon, former Executive VP, former Assistant Secretary of State under Bill Clinton. Robert Zoellick, former Executive Vice President, former Deputy Secretary of State, U.S. Trade Rep under George W. Bush, current President, World Bank. Louis J. Free, board member of Fannie Mae, Director of the FBI under Clinton, federal judge. Stephen Friedman, former board member, Assistant to Bush for Economic Policy. Michelle Davis. Wayne Berman, outside lobbyist, Assistant Secretary of Commerce under President George Bush, Senior Advisor in Bush-Cheney Presidential Transition, currently a fundraiser for Senator John McCain's presidential campaign. Steve Ricchetti, outside lobbyist, Deputy Chief of Staff to Clinton. And finally, Kirsten Chadwick, outside lobbyist, Special Assistant to President George W. Bush for Legislative Affairs, currently a fundraiser for McCain's campaign. Freddie Mac, shall I go down the names? Rahm Emanuel, the very same Rahm Emanuel who says that that's what they mean by the days of awe, was a former board member of none other than Freddie Mac. See how it all works? Senior advisor to Bill Clinton, blah, blah, blah. But now old Rahm Emanuel says that's what they mean by the days of awe, O-R-E. Susan Hirschman, outside lobbyist, chief of staff to former House Majority Whip Tom DeLay. Remember that name? Michael Bates, outside lobbyist, campaign official for President Reagan, presidential candidate Bob Dole, and President Bush. See, they spread the money around. And don't assume it's only Democrats. It's 80% Democrats, but it's 20% Republican hardcore. There it is. So those are the political hacks in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac who've done quite well indeed. And now you understand the rest of the sad story on the Savage Nation. Chicago, Gary, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I agree with you on all the bad stuff about Freddie and Fannie, but the case with that old lady, where's that $45,000 that she borrowed? You know, she's a classic case of using the house as an ATM machine and sort of stuff. But where was Fannie and Freddie is good.
No, I think they should strip her naked in the streets of Akron after she's out of the hospital with the gunshot wounds, and they should tar and feather her, the 90-year-old. She was irresponsible. It wasn't Fannie Mae who was irresponsible. It wasn't the shyster in the loan business who encouraged her to take another mortgage on her loan. Oh, no, it wasn't the people who told her to do this, do that. No, none of those people who are encouraged her to borrow money she could never pay back should be stripped naked and forced to walk down the street tarred and feathered. It should be a 90-year-old woman. Come on, Gary. You know, of course she reneged on her mortgage. But she's living in a little broken-down house. She deserves to be thrown in the streets?
Never said that. Where's the money? Where's the family that was with her?
I would rather see where the money is in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'd like to see the hundreds of millions of dollars stolen by the gangsters on Wall Street that was stolen from women like her. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see them walking the streets tarred and feathered, not the 90-year-old woman. Come on, Gary. San Francisco, Lyle, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, you're doing a great job. Thank you. I was the old lady that got kicked out. I was going to draw an analogy between the movie The Grapes of Wrath when the bulldozers came in. And the guy just said, I'm doing my job. And he was a friend of the family down the road, and he was driving a bulldozer for the big corporation.
You know, though, Lyle, let me say this to you. This is the beginning. And I mean, it's only the beginning of what's coming in this country. You know, and I know this bailout is a Band-Aid. It is not the cancer cure that we need to be taking in this country. There's a very serious cure for cancer that needs to be administered to the nation's finances. And this was a Band-Aid with some antiseptic over a festering tumor. And I believe we're going to see thousands of people thrown out of their houses, if not hundreds of thousands. There's just simply no way the government can bail everybody out of their mortgages. There's no way in the world this can go on. Now we have the strudelmaker here in California, Arnold Strudelmaker, another phony Republican, who's saying that he's $7 billion short. He wants to borrow it from the government. Hey, Arnold, close down the emergency rooms to illegal aliens. You can save $7 billion in 1 year. Arnold! Put CHP officers in the hospitals, Arnold!
Savage.
Today's show is called The Days of Ore, O-R-E, on the Savage Nation. Now, we can talk about last night's debate. Boring. Been done. But there is something I want to mention. Biden is such a 14-carat phony. When he talks about the fact that both of them have sons going off to Iraq, he should have added that his son is going to be a trial lawyer in Iraq. Now, that's really a dangerous tour of duty. The very same kind of wonderful trial lawyers who are skewering the Marines left and right in Iraq. That's the kind of trial lawyer that they're sending over there. You hear this? Bo Biden, a captain in the National Guard and Delaware's attorney general, will be a trial lawyer in the 261st Signal Brigade. So in other words, they're going to see if they can burn any of the military men over there, and they'll use Biden's son to see if they can put him in jail. Wonderful. Terrific. What would you expect from a Democrat going to Iraq? Chicago, Bob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, or I should say Dr. Savage, I've turned you off quite a number of times when I heard you ripping on Bush, but as of today, you won me, or I should say Bush lost me. I've finally given up. I'm not going to be objective anymore.
Well, I've been doing this off and on for 8 years, and it's been very hard for many people to understand why. There are many Johnny-come-latelys who call themselves independents, but they're anything but. They're just opportunists. But the fact of the matter is, here we see at the end of Bush's reign of terror that he's been a liberal all along.
I didn't want to admit it, and I was turned off a couple times by some of the things you said, but today was that there was a little bit of levity I heard in that little speech by Nancy Pelosi, though. I think she's probably the first woman in the country who's complimented Barney Frank on his fabulous staff.
Well, why do you think Nancy Pelosi's thrilled? Let's look at this, a few of the ladles of pork. One of them went to Samoa. Did you see that one, a $33 million tax dodge for some company in Samoa? There are allegations that that company just might have something to do with the good congresswoman's district. And we'll leave it at that. Something to do with tuna fish. Sounds awfully fishy to me. How about the debate last night? You want to talk about that? You want to talk about the 70 million people? I was one of them who watched it. I watched it till I couldn't watch it anymore. I got takeout food. I almost puked from it between the two of them. She got the better of him. He looked so horrible. I mean, just in plain old if you facial recognition, he looked like a dirty, evil old man politician from the old school. The guy looked like oil can Harry. The guy looked like a villain. His face even darkened. That fixed smile, the false teeth, the hair plugs, and the makeup. The guy was central casting villain. She was this cheerful. Remember the movie Fargo years ago by the Coen brothers? Her accent's like Fargo. I'm the first one to notice that in the media. That's just neither here nor there, but that's her accent. Remember when that car dealer up in Fargo, North Dakota? There's like a bit of the North Dakota plains, you know. She's a true American woman, and she's like a Heinz 57 woman. You can't quite get it, which is why she's so appealing. And that's why the elitists hate her, is because they know she is America in that regard. Brilliant, she isn't. She's feisty. She can hold her own. She had the flashcards. She was able to go to the flashcards and make it sound as though she, you know, was not reading them. That's good. That's what a politician needs to do. But if you ask me who do I trust more clearly, it's Sarah over Biden. There's no question about it. Not that she's, you know, whatever, but better than him. That's all. And Schmagegi, where's Schmagegi? The party's leader, McCain. He was congratulated. I swear, wait till you hear what's coming up next. McCain was on the fundraising trail yesterday, so he speaks to a group of women, and listen what they say to him.
When are you going to take the gloves off and just go at him?
How about Tuesday night?
Let's stop. The women are screaming to McCain to show a pair of rockets in his pockets. They're begging McCain to act like a man. They're begging McCain to act like a war hero. They're begging McCain to act like the leader of his party. The women say to him, when are you going to take the gloves off? And he almost, his voice breaks up, and he says, how about Tuesday? Wait, it gets worse. This is what McCain said later that day.
May I say I respect Senator Obama for what he has achieved.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Just when you want to reach out and say, I'll go for it, again, he cuts your hand off. Ay, what a trouble. What trouble we are in. The market tanked. The market's interesting. The market emotionally reacted to the bailout because they know that the stock market reacted to this, you know. So my lead story is the Ohio woman attempts suicide. It just wound up on Drudge. Look, he's 100 times bigger than my site. I'm not competing with his site. He's the best site in the business, is Matt's site. But we do dig up some good stories before others do out of the matrix. Out of the matrix. You find Sarah Palin sexy? I don't. I mean, personally, it's not even sex appeal. I think that she appeals to the average guy in a certain way. She's tough, you know, brainy, strong. Definitely not sexy. I mean, just she's too strong looking to be sexy. She's a leader type, a leader type. Pelosi and tuna fish. There's something stinks about the tuna fish Samoa Pelosi connection. Something tells me Charlie Tuna swam with a little bag of mayonnaise from Samoa to San Francisco. Something tells me Charlie Tuna is involved in that one. 1-800-449-8255. So now Schwarzenegger says the state's bankrupt. New York says they're bankrupt. The blind governor of New York says he's broke now, too. Everyone's broke. They all got the handout. Solution, there's a quick solution. Put police in front of every emergency room in New York, California, and everywhere else, and demand citizenship papers. That's all. Simple. No ticky, no laundry. No citizenshipy, no Medicare. You don't deserve it. You're not entitled to it. We don't have the money. We're broke. We can only do this when we thought we weren't broke. I've been saying for 15 years we're going to go broke. 15 years I've been telling you we're going to go bankrupt from this insane immigration policy. They're taking out more than they're putting in, no matter what the liars say. The very same liars who bankrupted Wall Street have bankrupted this country in a million other ways. Why? Why? Because they want the cheap labor. They don't care about the country. They don't care about the social costs of the illegal aliens. You could tell them till you're blue in the face that they're full of, that they're liars, that they don't all come here to work, that one out of three prisoners is an illegal alien who came here to murder, rape, kill, counterfeit, run drugs, be in a gang. Go tell them that. How much do the prisoners cost us? $16 billion a year, according to my estimates. I've given you the numbers. I've told you how to save $116 billion a year immediately. Does anyone quote me? No. Does Drudge quote me? No. Nobody in the conservative media quotes me because I'm the only one who has answers. They don't want answers. They want funny money, and they want funny answers from Republican hacks who pretend to be conservatives. I have given you methods of controlling this insane beast called the economy. Start with cracking down on benefits to people who are not citizens. We can't afford it. We never could afford it. But now maybe the schmucks will understand we can't afford it. Schwarzenegger says the state's broke. Well, of course it's been broke. He inherited it when it was broke. So why shouldn't it be broke when he built the government bigger than it was before? He took it over and he hired the lesbian Democrat who ran the government before he took it over, Ms. Kennedy. Ms. Kennedy was running the state of California for the Democrat liberal who bankrupted California. Schwarzenegger takes it over, makes believe he's a conservative. He hooks in all of the schmucks in the state who thought he was a conservative because he had big muscles. And he spoke with a big accent like a big man. But it turns out he's a liberal. He hires her now to run the state. And at the end of the day, I'm broke too. I need a handout. Of course you're broke. You're spending more than you're taking in. How can you support everybody and everything? It's impossible. You cannot support illegal aliens anymore, Arnold, nor anybody else. You put a cop in every emergency room. You must show citizenship or no medical care. Sorry, we don't have the money. Somebody's paying for it. The hospitals are going broke. So there it is. I'm giving you one simple, direct solution to the problem. Have you heard one politician talk about cutting anything? No, they added $150 billion to the $700 billion. And there's Barney Frank talking about the days of awe. The days of awe are truly days of awe. God must have reached down and protected him. Because only in a country like this could a criminal gangster like him get away with it without being in jail. In that sense, I understand why he calls it the days of awe. Houston, David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Barney Frank belongs in jail for fraud.
Keep on going. I'm not arguing with you. Barney Frank caused this. He was one of the principal architects. He was one of the principal architects of loans and mortgages for unqualified minorities and illegal aliens. Barney Frank deserves jail time.
See, I wonder how much of this money ended up in Mexico through fraud.
Well, remember the last administration under Bill Clinton? Let us go back because I have a very good memory for political events. We had a Treasury Secretary named Bob Rubin. Remember him? Vaguely remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Thin
yeah.
Fellow, old Bob Rubin. Well, Bob Rubin had also been the CEO of Goldman Sachs. Did you know that?
Yes, I remember you talking
about that. And did you know that Bob Rubin engineered a $15 billion loan to Mexico? I think it was $15 billion. Remember that? To bail Mexico out. Remember that little bailout? Now, why would Goldman Sachs's Bob Rubin want to bail out Mexico during the Clinton administration? Because if you follow the money is everywhere. And all they're doing is covering their own bets. They're covering their own bets in the big casino called the worldwide economy. It had nothing to do with Mexico or America. It had to do with covering Goldman Sachs's bets on businesses doing business in Mexico. In other words, the companies that were running to Mexico to build maquiladoras, to build plants in Mexico, got their capital from Goldman Sachs, and they wanted to cover that bet, okay? You don't have to be a genius to figure that one out, David. You only have to be Michael Savage. Thanks for the call. What would you like me to do today? What do you want to talk about? JD, on line one from Hawaii, you're on the Savage Nation. Now, hold on. I've not given out one copy of Psychological Nudity, and we've crossed the halfway point of the books I've printed. And I'm going to tell you right, you know, I don't lie to you. I don't make stuff up. I printed a certain amount. We've crossed the halfway point in that printing. I know the other half is going to go once the holidays come, and they're not going to be there. J.D., if you can name one story in the book Psychological Nudity, I'll give you a free copy. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Why Republicans should treat their customers, treat us like a restaurant, like a restaurant customers.
Bingo, you win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Yes, there's a couple of political stories in the Psychological Nudity. One of them is why Republicans should treat voters like restaurant customers. So, but what did you call about, J.D.? You're going to get that free copy. It's winging its way to you in a few weeks. What's on your mind?
I'm active duty military, Michael, and I'm hugely conservative, and I was extremely disappointed with last night's presidential debate. Joe Biden's up there, you know, spewing his socialist views, and I don't think Sarah Palin did really anything to disseminate her from this Bush administration that is politically cross-dressing on the fiscal point of view.
Okay, so you feel that Sarah Palin is just another Republicrat?
Yeah, I believe that she's going to do fiscally whatever John McCain has planned, and John McCain voted for this $700 billion bailout. I don't think any of them really are taking a conservative fiscal view, taking our well-being into account, especially the military.
She was a little much more conservative than Biden was and much more conservative than McCain was. In some areas, for example, when the issue of homosexuals came up, did you hear her answer?
Yeah.
I was sitting at that point. I had to put my fork down because the moderator, to her credit, I thought did a good job. She did a much better job than I thought she would do. I didn't see any bias in the moderator's job. They should give her credit, incidentally. I'm the first conservative to say that. I think she did a superb job, actually. One of the best jobs I've ever seen. The young lady from PBS. I think she did the questions were very good. Of course, she avoided certain questions, such as illegal immigrants, borders, language, and culture weren't brought up, but we've already understood that both parties stand for the demise of America. You wouldn't expect that. But aside from that, when she brought up marriage, she forced Biden to declare that both he and whoever he's running with, Obama, are opposed to gay marriage. Did you hear that?
I heard that, Mike.
Yeah, but I know what you're saying. That doesn't mean that much. Another, at the end of the day, what do you care about? It's not the biggest deal in the world. It isn't the biggest deal in the world. To me, it isn't the biggest deal in the world. The biggest deal in the world is whether the economy can survive or not right now, and whether we're going to have to be dragged into another war. J.D., you're active military. How do you feel about a bigger, wider war coming as a result of this economic crisis?
I feel that I'm not going to be able to get out, Mike. I think the jobs are going to dry up, and as soon as my enlistment time is up, I don't think I'm going to be able to find anything. I think I'm going to be forced to stay in because that's the safest bet, and that sounds dramatically like a socialist country where only the military is getting paid.
It's interesting. I don't think I need to comment on that, J.D. Thank you. But, you know, the military isn't the worst career you can choose, by the way. You ought to be thankful that you're in it, and you can do that. It's interesting that during the Great Depression, my father told me people who had jobs in the civil services did very well, you know, teachers, cops, firemen. He kept telling me that. And, of course, it made no sense to me because I grew up in the booming 50s. It didn't, you know, what the heck did the Depression mean to me? But he kept saying to me, civil service jobs were the ones that were good, and the people who were cops and firemen and teachers and such who worked for the city always had an income. And that they were able to hold on to their houses. And the other people, many other people, lost their houses during the Great Depression. You know, it's interesting that many of you listening to this show don't even know what the Great Depression is. I'm not criticizing you for it. Why should you? But I certainly wasn't alive during it, but I was in many ways molded by the psyche of the Great Depression because my parents were traumatized by it, as were all of their other friends in their whole circle. They were all poor, and they all lived through the Great Depression. I kept hearing stories about it, and I didn't really know what it was until I started studying it and reading a bit about it. But what I'm getting at is I have the right mind for these times. I'm actually perfect for these times because I've been a Depression-era person from the time I've always expected a Great Depression in America. I've always been shocked we haven't had one before. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah. So Palin is tougher than McCain, which is obvious. The women that rallied around McCain begged him to act like a man. Play that again. This is yesterday. McCain is on a fundraiser. Listen to what the women said to him.
When are you going to take the gloves off and just go at him?
Okay. Now, hold it. He says, well, how about next Tuesday when the debate comes? He won't do that. It's not in him. He has no fire in his belly. He has only compromise in his belly. But it gets worse. He then congratulates Obama. Listen to this.
May I say I respect Senator Obama for what he has achieved.
Oh, God help us. God help us. God help us. He has a battle for hearts and minds, and he respects the opponent. And the women are begging him to take the gloves off. He says, I respect the opponent. Obama is a demagogue. Obama is a dangerous demagogue. The people surrounding Obama are evil, dangerous demagogues, in my humble opinion. The country, as bad as it is today, and it's in very bad shape after the 8 years of mismanagement by George Bush and his Republican cohorts, I believe will not survive an Obama administration. It will not resemble the United States of America that we inherited in any way, shape, or form. What exact form it will take is a matter of how hard we can fight against the Obama maniacs and whether or not we'll have any success in doing so, because we've lost any ability to do so, as you can see. We are all American cuckolds today. We have been cheated on by our two-timing Republican Johns, and we see that we have no power whatsoever. When 90% of the American people said no to the bailout, and they did it anyway, show me what part of that is representative democracy. Show me what part of that is the House of Representatives. Who do they represent? Certainly not the people. So they don't represent the people. Who do they represent? They represent some other bodies.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The yeas are 263. The nays are 171. The motion is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
And I really feel a great sense of responsibility for Rahm and for me and for many others. These are the days of awe. The days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for Jewish people.
Gee, thanks,
they are the
Barney.
Days of awe.
Hold it. Are you offended that Barney Frank is dragging Judaism into this, a man of his low caliber? Does it give you an ick factor if you're Jewish or not? Does it make you feel squirmy? Is there something wrong with this picture that he would bring in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to the bailout of the banks, number one, and suddenly he wraps himself in Jewishness? Does this strike you as bizarre? Keep going.
And we have a task that it's appropriate to contemplate in that context.
Thank you very much, Barney, for your enlightening remarks, your tremendous leadership, and if I may commend your just fabulous staff for their great work. Absolutely. On this legislation for the Financial Services Committee and mine as well.
Plenty of people up in Boston like his fabulous staff.
All of us had to put up with this terrible financial problem. They had to put up with the financial problem and me.
That laugh.
No comment.
That practice fake. Oh, please, I can't take it. You know, hold it a minute. Hold it. You know, I've come to realize that politicians think that they're immortal. I realize in her laugh, there's a tinge of a sense of immortality. I have to work on this to develop this idea. I don't think there's a degree of humility in any of them where they even understand what the word humility means. I think that they have such a sense of power. They have no concept that they could ever be touched by, let alone the people. Forget the people. The people are little ants that they fly over. But to them, there is no God. To them, there's no higher power. There's no concept of consequences for any of their dirty, rotten tricks. And so you get this kind of behavior and laughter and self-congratulatory banter and no concept of how the people are reacting to it. I'm thinking of a book I read years ago called, I forget, it's too depressing. I don't want to go into it. And you're not ready for me to talk about a book anyway. I grew up reading for another era, books. I know that Miss Palin doesn't know what magazine she reads. That she's working on the list, which is okay. She's better than Biden. Okay. So let's clear that up. But it worries me that she didn't even know what a book was. Like, what book? She doesn't know what magazine she reads. I think Bush reads magazines. I know Reagan said he read magazines. You know, Guns and Ammo, Hollywood Today. He did a good job just reading magazines. But Reagan was very bright. That you got to give him that. I've seen the transcripts of, the copies of the speeches he wrote in longhand. He wrote them himself. He was far more intelligent than his detractors made him out to be. And it could be the same with her. It's hard to say. I don't think that because you have book knowledge, you're necessarily brilliant. Let me make that very clear. And I've said that before. I mean, I can get very snobby about book knowledge because I have a lot of it. But the fact of the matter is, I have enough of it to know that it doesn't mean very much in the case of most people. And that I've met a lot of street people who are much smarter than a lot of book learners. So, you know, that's neither here nor there. Let me give you an example of what learning means. There's a story today. Top psychiatrist failed to report drug income. Now, how many years have I been warning you about the dangers of Ritalin, the dangers of Prozac, the dangers of drugging your children? How many years have I worked on this? 25 years? 25 years. And you believe that the doctors are telling you to drug yourself and your children because they care about you. One of the nation's most influential psychiatrists earned more than $2.8 million in consulting arrangements with drug makers between 2000 and 07. And he failed to report at least $1.2 million of this income to his university and violated federal research rules, according to documents provided to congressional investigators, came out in the New York Times today. The shrink, Dr. Charles B. Nemiroff of Emory University, is the most prominent example to date in a series of disclosures that is shaking the world of academic medicine and seems likely to face broad changes in the relationships between doctors and drug makers. In one telling example, Dr. Nemiroff signed a letter dated July 15, 04, promising Emory administrators that he would earn less than $10,000 a year from GlaxoSmithKline to comply with federal rules. But on that day, he was at the Four Seasons Resort in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, earning $3,000 of what would become $170,000 in income that year from the British drug giant, 17 times the figure he had agreed upon. Dr. Nemiroff was the editor-in-chief of the influential journal Neuropsychopharmacology. His research has focused on the long-term mental health risks associated with child abuse, as well as the relationship between depression and cardiovascular disease. And I'll pause right here. He's not the only one, by the way. In early June, there was a report of a Dr. Joseph Biederman, a so-called renowned child psychiatrist at Harvard Medical School, who had reported to university officials earning several hundred thousand dollars apiece in consulting fees from drug makers from 2000 to 2007, when in fact they had earned at least $1.6 million each. Then the senator focused on Dr. Alan F. Schatzberg, Dr. Alan F. Schatzberg of Stanford, president-elect of the American Psychiatric Association, whose $4.8 million in stock holdings in a drug development company raised the senator's concerns. Now, what does this have to do with you? Dr. Nemiroff was the principal investigator for a five-year, $3.9 million grant financed by the National Institute of Mental Health, for which GlaxoSmithKline provided drugs. Income from GlaxoSmithKline of $10,000 or more in any year of the grant, a threshold Dr. Nemiroff crossed in 03, 04, 05, and 06, would have required Emory to inform the health institutes and manage the conflict or remove Dr. Nemiroff as the investigator. Repeatedly assured by Dr. Nemiroff that he had not crossed this income threshold, Emory did nothing. So it means that they're pimping for drug manufacturers. It means that the crack dealer with a gold chain, whose jeans are hanging down underneath his waist, is more to be trusted than Dr. Nemiroff, in my opinion. It means that the crack-dealing gangs are probably more straight up than the psychiatrists on the payroll of the drug companies, because at least the crack dealers don't pretend to be healers. They're just providing people what they want. Now, I'm not telling you to go use crack. I'm not telling you to use drugs at all. I'm totally opposed to the use of psychopharmacological substances. Totally. However, don't pose as a healer and then be taking money on the side like a whore, and then be peddling drugs that you work for the company you're working for. So when I wrote Healing Children Naturally, 1982, republished it, and it's a perennial bestseller on my website. Yeah, I don't know how it just keeps selling. Small numbers, you know, nothing that would make it to any list, but it sells consistently. A few hundred copies a month, or a few thousand copies in some months. It's amazing. I never advertise it. And it's a very good book because it's based entirely upon natural healing. I don't take money from drug companies. I've never worked for a drug company. I've never taken a schmear from a drug company. And now you understand why I'm not in academia. Now you understand why I'm not in politics. Now you understand why I'm in talk radio. But let me get back to talk radio's main topic today. Now, I bring up the top psychiatrist being basically a pimp for the drug companies. There's no other word for it. It's a straight-up word. It has a meaning. If you've seen the movie American Pimp, it's not a dirty word. It means somebody who basically poses in one way but acts another, you want to put it that way, or represents somebody, whatever. I don't have to explain what it is. What I'm getting at is we have no faith in the Congress. We have zero faith in politicians. 10% approval rating, 12, I don't know what it is. We have no faith in the medical establishment. Now, that does not mean that there aren't good politicians. There are. Mike Pence stood up to this juggernaut today. Ron Paul argued against the bailout bill this morning in a rational manner. So there are here and there people who will stand up, and there were some who stood up. And there are wonderful doctors, and I've met them and I use them. And I just most recently had a wonderful experience with a doctor, of all places, in an emergency room. He turned out to be the best doctor I've had in years. There's something about emergency room doctors that I don't know what it is. They seem to be more honest than most. I don't know what it is. The academic doctors, watch out for them. I was in that field for a long period of time, and I, in fact, wrote a paper back in the 70s called Beware the Academic Businessman. And the reason was that I wrote it in the 70s is because I felt these guys just didn't have the brains or the guts to be actual businessmen. I know what it takes to be an actual businessman because I have one in my family who is a shining knight. He's the shining knight of the family. He's got the brains and the guts that's 100 times better than mine. And he did it all on his own, and he's as honest as they come. And I have another friend who's worth a lot of money. This man made every penny himself, and he gives most of it away. My other friend is a rock-hard conservative, has been all his life, made hundreds of millions of dollars by creating and inventing products honestly, never robbed a cent from anybody. Never. Built an empire on honesty. I don't know any corrupt businessmen. I've never met one. I never met a shady businessman. Never. So don't assume that every businessman is a crook. That's something put out by the leftist politicians and leftists in general. They want you to hate business. But I'm not a businessman. I never have been. I've never been able to do well in business. I don't understand it that well. It takes a certain skill set that I lack. I'm too much of a dreamer. I come up with great ideas. But I don't focus on any one of them forever to make that. Well, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes too many ideas are not as good as one good idea. That's not criticizing me. I mean, I'm sure Leonardo would have been a terrible businessman. There are many examples of pretty amazing people who've created an awful lot of amazing things that were not good businessmen. I'm very lucky that I have what I have, to be frank with you. But forget about me for the minute. I'm getting to something else, I believe. At least I'm trying to get there. I guess what I'm getting at is what I said earlier, which is that my parents lived through the Great Depression of the 1929 period. So I was lectured about the Great Depression as a little child, day and night. All I heard was depression, 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 what it did to the families. You have no idea how lucky you are. Every bite of food I took, my father told me how lucky I was. Would you believe it? He gave me a guilt trip for eating. Didn't stop me from eating. I'm a big eater. I don't care. I don't feel guilty when I eat. But every bite of food that I took, he said, ah, you're living pretty good on the fat of the land. I can remember it to this day. I had no idea why he was doing this to me. I don't think he was doing it for me. I don't know what he was doing. Ah, you're living pretty good on the fat of the land, huh? Knocking down a... He used to watch me eat and say that to me, like I should be guilty for the food that they put on the table. I don't know what that warped view was all about, but it somehow it has something to do with deprivation and privation during the Depression. So he was an immigrant, had no money, and he was saved by the great social welfare programs of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, primarily the Works Projects Administration, the WPA. So, oh, that makes you a socialist, huh? No, it makes me a realist. I don't just deal with a textbook is what I'm trying to tell you. Most of who you listen to in radio don't understand the first thing about reality. So they've sold you a bill of goods about free market, free market, free market. I've tried to warn you that they're wrapping themselves in the flag and giving you the hogwash, free market. Then Bush comes along with socialism. They call it free market economics. See, I know the difference between socialism and pure capitalism, and I've warned you about pirates in the capitalist system for years now. I've warned you about them. I've been telling you for years that you're not living through a pure capitalist system. I've told you you're living through a monopolistic system. When you have only a few people operating in the media, that's a monopoly. That's not capitalism. When you have a few people operating in any business, that's monopoly capitalism. That is not pure capitalism. And that's why this happened. You want to name, you want to create blame for this. You may as well start with the great monopolies that have developed in America. The great monopolies are as responsible for this economic collapse that we are facing today as anything else. This is not pure capitalism, where the free market truly determines the outcome, sets the price of goods. This has been monopoly capitalism for a long time. There are only a few hands that control the mortgage banking business. There are only a few hands that control the banking business. There are only a few hands that control the media. There are only a few hands that control every industry in the United States of America. This is not free market capitalism. It is monopoly capitalism. It's time to bust the trusts. I'll be back. Savage. Is none other than the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Please go to michaelsavage.com and see the article on the corrupt psychiatrists, the corrupt politicians, the puppets of the oligarchy. And try to understand what I said to you, that we have not been living through free market economics under George Bush. We've been living through monopoly capitalism, which is almost the opposite of what he pretended to propose. In other words, I don't have the time to go into it, but trust me, I understand exactly what I'm saying to you. A true free market has competition. Show me where there's competition in the media. When one man can own a cable channel, a book publishing company, a magazine, a political magazine, radio stations, television stations in the same market, and exclude certain individuals and stories from all of his publications, as they do me, for example, in a certain corporation, because they don't want any competition. It's not because they hate me. It's a business decision. Why would the Leprechaun's company want to say anything about Michael Savage when he competes with me in the book publishing world and on radio, where I beat him hands down? So this is monopoly capitalism, for example. But take any field and take your field. Tell me now how many people control it. How many people control the mortgage industry? How many people control the government? Well, you certainly don't control the government. You have no influence over the government. Go into any field, drug manufacturing. I can name any number of industries. There's a monopoly. Fundamentally, it's a monopoly functioning. And that's why we have very little competition. That's why prices are fixed. I think I'm going to have my old friend on. He's a very famous antitrust attorney. And I'm going to get his opinion of what I just said. I hope he's listening to the show, if he is. J.A., if you're listening to the show, please call me at 1-800-449-8255, and I'll put you right on the air. I want to hear your views of monopoly capitalism being responsible for some of this pork and greed and the collapse and demise of what's going on Wall Street, and how this is not going to really help us, and why this is not the days of ore, but the days of ore, O-R-E. We're living to the days
Savage.
Of war.
She can live just like a queen on what you're making. Horses, and that's a lot cheaper. But that's a lot cheaper. Now the time to fall in love.
Welcome back to the Great Depression Show. The Days of Ore, O-R-E, for the Congress. The Days of Ore for Congress. They're an ore of themselves. They're an ore of themselves. I'm playing some Depression-era music. Potatoes are cheaper, tomatoes are cheaper, now's the time to grab a gal. I, as I said to you, I grew up in a home that was deeply affected by the Depression. I wasn't born until after the Depression, but I was raised steeped in the mentality of those who had lived through the Depression, which makes me the perfect man for our times. People used to say to me that, you know, you're out of sync with the 60s. You're out of sync with the 70s. You're out of sync with the 80s. You're out of sync with the 90s. You're out of sync with the boom, boom 2000s. I have been. I admit it. I've always expected an economic collapse. I never understood how this could go on. I always suspected the economy was built on a house of cards. I'm a very basic person. Earn, spend. Don't spend more than you earn. You'll go broke. Now, all my life I've been that way. You can only spend what you make. You can borrow a certain amount, but you got to make sure you can pay it back. Mortgage 30 years, you got to make sure you can make the payments, make sure you have enough income. You know, put money away. Don't spend like an idiot. When you have children, don't buy a new Porsche. Put the money in the bank for rainy days. I mean, grew up on all of that. Frugal. Frugal doesn't mean cheap. There are rich people who are cheap, and there are frugal people who are generous. Ask any waiter in North Beach whether I'm cheap or generous. They'll tell you the truth. So I stand on the fact that I understand the Depression mentality. I think we're moving into that era. I certainly don't think this Band-Aid is going to fix the economy. I think a belt tightening of the economy is the only thing that'll work. And I've given you answers. I've told you how to do it. I told you put policemen in every hospital in America and make people show citizenship to give them any admission to the emergency room, because we can't afford to treat foreigners for free. It can't be done. Start with the medical system. Then go to the schools. No education for illegal aliens. I'm sorry. You're a nice person. We love you. But we have to take care of our children first, and our educational system is broken. So go down the list. Tighten the belt. No more Wall Street bailouts. No more Wall Street welfare. Find out who robbed the money and take their assets. Take their G5s, 4s, 3s. Take their homes away. Throw them out of the country if need be. Deport them. See if I care. You can deport the Wall Street thieves along with the illegal aliens. So don't think I'm picking on illegal aliens. So I was made for the Depression. I'm born for these days that are coming. Whether I will remain in radio for that period of time that you need me, I don't know. I truly don't know. Honest to God, I honestly don't know what I'm going to do in the future. I am so angry at the phony Republicans. I am so I have such contempt for the political structure that I feel this is a wasted job. There were years that I felt I could make a difference. The early years of radio, when I came along and I revolutionized talk radio in America, make no mistake about it, I changed talk radio in a way no one has ever done before or since. I connect with the audience and I move the audience, meaning you, in a way no one else can or does. I have a direct connection to the American people who listen to this show. And I know that. I don't need anyone to confirm it. I don't need to go to a website to see if it's true or not. But the fact of the matter is, in the beginning, when I came up with borders, language, and culture as a definition, as the definition of a nation, when I first created the Paul Revere Society, which is no longer for reasons I don't want to go into right now, I said, how do you define a nation? Borders, language, and culture. How do you define a politician? Borders, language, and culture. Has McCain talked about borders, language, or cultural issues? Not the border, because he's going to grant amnesty to 20 million illegal aliens, which means it'll be the death of America's demographics, if not the death of America forever. We'll become one North American continent. We'll be living in a dictatorship the way they do in Mexico and South America. As sure as I'm sitting here, we're going to be boiled down into some third world nation unless we can make these darn politicians recognize that it's our country, not theirs, to abuse. Has there been a discussion by McCain, the so-called conservative, about language? When I say A nation is defined by borders, language, culture. Let's go to language. Has there been a discussion of making English the official language of the United States of America? No. You don't even think about it anymore. Cultural issues. They came up last night in the debate. Man, they talked about gay marriage for 2 seconds, and both sides immediately said they oppose it. They don't really oppose it. Obama's for it. It's the only reason he said he's opposing this because he wants to get elected, then he'll do it by executive order, as sure as I'm sitting here. No question in my mind. Did guns come up? Did they ask Palin about guns? No, because she would have won hands down. This woman is a hunter. She understands guns, unlike the other side, which hates guns, distrusts guns, and they like a National Socialist policy of seizing your weapons for self-defense, as sure as I'm sitting here. They wouldn't say it to you, but they're liable to do it by fiat, by executive order. So when I say to you a nation can be defined by borders, language, and culture, I don't see much of that in the debates at all. Now, what was the Depression like, to go back to an earlier idea? I don't have the time. You can look it up. Probably popularly, you know the story, most particularly from John Steinbeck's great novel, The Grapes of Wrath. The Grapes of Wrath evidenced one aspect of the Great Depression. Not only was there a collapse in the economics of the United States, terrifying for people throughout the world in the 1930s, the whole world was in economic disorder. Totalitarianism arose, both in Germany, Italy, the Soviet Union. War was on the horizon. Now, for those of us in the United States, the Great Depression was marked by bank panics, which destroyed faith in the economic system. Sound familiar? Joblessness, which then occurred. Long bread lines. Men were selling apples in the streets who had previously been white-collar workers. I know you say it can't happen here. I know that, because you've never lived through a day of a bad economy. But I'm giving you a picture, a black, dark picture of what happened in this country. Then what happened was the worst drought in modern American history struck the Great Plains in 1934. Windstorms stripped the topsoil from millions of acres, turned the whole area into what became known as the Dust Bowl. Destroyed livestock, crops in unprecedented amounts. It was biblical in its activity. 2.5 million people fled the Plains states, some from Oklahoma. They were called Okies. They were derided, the white people from Oklahoma. And they went to California, where they thought they would find sunshine and a better life. What they found was poorly paid work as migrant farm laborers. They were the illegal aliens of their time. Almost all white people picked crops in that day. And many things changed in America at that time. Homeless families built shelters made from wood, cardboard, and tin. They were called Hoovervilles. So-called Hoovervilles arose in America. He was the president at the time. Thousands of teenagers became drifters. They rode the rails. Marriages were postponed. Engagements went on forever. Birth rates declined. Children became adults overnight, taking over for the family as their fathers died or left and couldn't take care of the family. Young boys became men, took on responsibilities of the household. And strangely enough, the number of women in the workplace actually increased. That's something you wouldn't hear from the radical lying feminists. But during the Great Depression, women in the workplace actually increased. That's something else that happened. But one of the most popular tunes of the time was Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Now, fortunately and hopefully, we're not going to go there again. But I have no way to predict what's coming. I know that the gangsters on Wall Street who wrecked the economy through profligate madness and outright thievery have not been punished for what they have done. Instead, they went to us, the taxpayer, to bail out their bad investments. Now, if this bailout, so-called, would be the final fix, I might be for it. But I saw what they did in the 2 days between Monday and when they passed it. All they did was stuff it with impossible-to-believe greed and corruption of an order not seen since ancient Rome. Pelosi was laughing. She had a very good time announcing this. Bonnie Frank was laughing because the U.S. Marshals didn't come to put him in handcuffs. That's why he was referring to God. He could not believe he got away with, one, forcing the government to give loans to unqualified borrowers, mainly minorities, through the racket called whatever he used. And then, on top of it, loans were forced to be given by banks to illegal aliens who couldn't qualify for mortgages, 110% mortgages. The very same man who did this then had the nerve to demand that the taxpayers bail out his bad investments. No wonder he referred to God, Bonnie Frank. No wonder he said he's in awe of religion all of a sudden. He can't believe he can get away with destroying the economy and then robbing the economy a second time and not going to prison, not being taken into a paddy wagon. No wonder Barney Frank was referring to God today. And then the crocodile laugh from Nancy Pelosi was truly astonishing. Charlie Tuna would explain that one in part, I'm sure. Tax benefits for groups in Samoa, as diverse as groups in Samoa, arrow manufacturers. You understand how it all works, don't you? Every dollar gets you approximately every dollar gets you about $1,000 in benefits. So you pay $300,000 to a politician, you wind up with approximately $30 million in tax savings for your business, written right into the code just for you. That's the kind of government we have. It's called representative democracy. You put your money on your line and you get your representative writing a bill for you. Now, the phone number here, I don't even remember, 1-800-4498. I remember, I'm kidding you. My website's up all weekend. It's a 24-7 website, michaelsavage.com. And the poll, we just had a close down of who won the debate because the Democrats hacked it during the show. It was running 85% Palin against Biden, and the Democrats hacked the poll, so I just took it off the website because they switched it the other way. That won't make it to the Internet, of course, because Michael Savage doesn't exist. Only people who work for the monopoly capitalists exist in the media. You get how it works? If you work for a monopoly capitalist, then you are recognized. If you work for an independent syndicator, as I do, work with, you don't exist at all except in the minds of the people who listen to you. And I want to remind you again, if you just tuned in, this is the third largest radio show in America, and coming as late in the day as it does, and on the stations that it is on, that's an awesome accomplishment. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being so loyal to me for all of these 15 years on the radio. And thank you for making my books, four in a row, bestsellers on the New York Times bestseller list. And thank you also for ordering Psychological Nudity, my stories. Now, I want to talk about the stories for a minute. I just gave you a long story on the Depression. I told you I grew up in the Depression mentality. And I've always expected an economic depression. I never was comfortable with the high-flying lifestyle. I mean, I do lead it to a certain extent. There's no question I do. I'd be lying to you if I said otherwise. I mean, I have some pretty amazing possessions that I've purchased with my money that I earned with after-tax dollars. So it isn't your business what I own. I bought it. I earned it. So if I bought a boat, that's my business. It's not your business. But I'm not that comfortable with almost anything that I own. I've always expected an economic turndown. I've always expected a grim existence. So in that sense, these are the right times for me. These are absolutely the right times for me. And I'm thinking now about my book, Psychological Nudity, and of the 75 stories, many of them reflect Depression-era men. I just dawned on me that there's actually a thematic in a way. I'm like Louis and the Crazed Monkey, okay? But there are many others, including the one about who I call the Yawn Man Gets Cancer, who made a lot of money and then lost it all and wound up back where he started from in a little apartment. Of course, he lost it in the 1960s, not in the Depression. But it's a heck of a story, which I'm going to play for you the minute I come back, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad.
It is the Savage Nation. We're all shocked by the fact that we've been cuckolded by the Republicans. Those of us who call ourselves conservatives are just shocked that they have cheated on us and become what they've always been, which is something other than fiscal conservatives. Let's put it in a nice way. Now, I'm going to play a story from Psychological Nudity for those of you who have been waiting on the Yawn Man Gets Cancer. It's going to be only a few minutes. Then I'm going to come back. I am still recovering from something that's got me knocked down pretty, I don't know, just don't have all the energy I did a few months ago. So Rick Roberts will be filling in for me in the third hour, okay? I will get back to my form shortly, but it's best that I don't drain myself. You know, it's like a battery that, you know, is running down. I don't want to run the battery out altogether. So without further ado, let's hear The Yawn Man Gets Cancer from my great book, Psychological Nudity. The story I'm going to tell you occurred when I was a young man, first a kid and then a young man. And it was about a man who grew up as one of my father's best friends in a very poor neighborhood in New York City. They were immigrants together. Their parents came over. They came over, I think, maybe on the same boat, or they met each other in the slums of New York. And they both had a very tough life, and they worked their way up little by little, as the immigrants have to do and as they struggle in the society. And this man went into a business that took off at a certain point like a rocket. He hit a fad in a certain business, and he started to make a great deal of money, and he moved way beyond our family. While we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York, an attached brick house, he had the money to move his family to a detached house. Remember how important that distinction was in those days. It's like the Buick LeSabre as opposed to the Buick Roadmaster. Well, God forbid you, a Rockefeller, you bought a Cadillac, if you can imagine. That's how people used to grade themselves in those days, by their success, you know, their status, cars and houses. I don't suppose it's much different today. It just isn't as easy to figure out in some regard, not on the road anyway. Anyway, so he moved to this detached house in Roslyn, New York. And it was a beautiful house. It had its own garden all around it. We only had a little strip of grass in the backyard, a little teeny one in the front. And the carpet was wall to wall, and it was pink. And he was a big cigar smoker. And we go over and visit, and I had a very good time. He would gloat, you know, with the cigar and lord it over my father. And we'd leave. My father never said anything against him. But, you know, I could see in his eyes that he was in his, you know, he was a little, let's say lost that little battle at that time. You know how men are. I mean, men are competitive. Even if they love their friend, if their friend does better than them, there's a degree of envy in every human being. It's just one of the cardinal sins. As years went on, the man's business continued to thrive. And then I left home. I moved away from New York City. I went and did my thing, collecting plants, working for my graduate degrees, thousands of miles away. I was living 6,000 miles away, then 9,000 miles away in the Fiji Islands. And lo and behold, on one of my trips back to New York when I was already a father myself, I had heard that this man's business had collapsed entirely. The fad that he had rode like a wave had died. Women were no longer buying that particular product. And the man who had a chain of successful wholesale stores lost everything. He lost everything, and it was so fast that he wound up living where he started, on the Lower East Side of New York, in a poor relative's apartment with his wife and the relative's family, back where he started, in a one-room apartment. And that's where I come in. I come back from one of my trips to the Fiji Islands. I'm a young man in my, I don't know how old I must have been. I don't remember, 25, 30. I don't remember what age I was already anymore. And there he was, sitting in my father's house. And I loved this man. I loved him like another father. I loved all my father's friends. And you know how it is when you're a kid in a very close-knit community. You tend to love the people like they're your own. You know, we all grew up so closely together. There was never a bad word between him and my father. Man, he's sitting there shrunken up in the chair in my living room where he had lost everything. And he looks up at me, still smoking a cigar, and he was shrunken in the chair. And he looks up at me in his eyes and he says, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. And his eyes were like wandering left and right. He didn't understand what happened to him. And he said, I'd rather I have cancer than what God did to me. And lo and behold, I soon left New York. I went back to do what I did, which is collecting plants. And I heard that 2 years later, he died from one of the most rapidly invasive forms of brain cancer. Be careful what you say. God hears the truth, but waits. I'll be right back. It's a sad story, but it's my life. I mean, these are one of the moments of my life, so it's in psychological nudity. You say, well, why should I buy a book that has such depressing stories in it? I don't know. There are some good stories that make you laugh, but must everything make you laugh because you grew up on Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck? A Nation of Idiots? Happy Pills? Happy Stories? Merry-go-rounds? Get ready for the other side, kids, because the other side is just as much fun. You just got to understand what clothes to wear in the dark. You understand what I just said to you? Don't assume life is just a bowl of cherries, because it isn't. Get ready, kids, because the gangsters who robbed you on Wall Street have just gotten started fleecing you. Trust me on that. Trust me, they just got started. It's not over yet. It's not over by a long shot.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again, and always a pleasure to be in the Savage Nation with you. We're going to get to your calls here. I don't know what I can say that Michael hasn't already said. The bailout is now a reality. It really didn't take much. If you ever wondered what it cost to buy 58 members of Congress, did the math, it's about $130 billion. You, too, can have a brand new member of Congress sitting in your driveway, a billion here, a billion there. They'll take you wherever you want to go. Be the envy of the neighborhood as the neighbors drive by and, oh, look, the Roberts have a new congressman sitting in their driveway. Yeah, it only cost about $130 billion in these so-called sweeteners to get 58 members of Congress to change their vote from no to yes. Where do we go from here? Well, Michael just told you just a moment ago, it's going to get a whole lot worse. And partner, it's going to get a whole lot worse. Now the House has joined the Senate in taking $700 billion-plus worth of Main Street's money and sending it to Wall Street. So let me see if I understand this. I'm no Rhodes Scholar, but I've been to school a day or two. Congress spent money it doesn't have in these sweeteners to get reluctant members to vote even more money that they don't have from you. Oh, makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. Basically, the bailout was supposed to pacify the markets, but the stock market dropped from as soon. And I watched this thing. I watched it happen. I was sitting in my chair just shaking my head. And I thought, my God, had I known they were running a sale on congressmen, I would have clipped a few coupons and bought one myself. I was watching this vote. And as they continued to circle and vote, the stock market kept dropping. Well, think about it. The 2008 federal deficit ran more than $400 billion, even without the bailout. Washington's going to run up a half a trillion by 2009. I mean, the bailout will set the economy back like never before. Get ready for the recession. I did an interview with the BBC earlier today, and of course, in their very proper way, it was, you Yanks, is this going to fix everything? And I said, no. I said, you have to realize $700 billion. That's about 25 times your entire economy. This isn't going to fix anything. It's not going to fix anything. This is not a recovery bill. This is not a, if you just do this, it's all going to be roses bill. This is let's avert a disaster bill. That's what this is. We're still probably going to end up in a recession, and times are probably going to get tough, and it's going to be bad for everybody. And people are going to sit around and go, well, wait a minute, what was the $700 billion? Well, that was for government, and that was for Wall Street. You know, this is, in my mind, in whether you agree or disagree, I think there's plenty to indicate this was more of a federal government problem than it was a Wall Street problem. Wall Street was simply the disease, the full-blown disease. The symptoms were alive and well for a long, long time inside the Beltway. I mean, they just were. The Senate bailout bill is disaster, period. Let me give you just a few facts, and then I'll take your calls. A few facts from Brad Sherman. From California. And by the way, speaking of California, even as we're still shaking our heads looking at $700 billion fly out the window this afternoon, Schwarzenegger in California is saying, hey, we're in a jam. We may need $7 billion. Oh, sure, why not? Give me the checkbook. Billion here, billion there. After a while, it's just numbers, right? Still $1 million a month salaries. Still tens of billions to the Bank of China. Taxpayers are probably not going to recoup any of the cost under this revenue provision that was added, Sunday? The Treasury is not going to use the new insurance powers added to the bill last Sunday. Tens of billions are going to go to foreign investors. $1 million a month salaries are going to continue. Oversight board can critique, but they here's the thing. You know, they kept playing this thing up on Pelosi. Oh, good Lord. They keep saying, well, we're going to, it's much stricter oversight. Fine. You can critique and oversee all you want, but you don't have the power to halt any action. And listen, all you people out there that are teetering back and forth with your adjustable rate mortgages and, phew, we dodged the bullet, honey. Oh, I'm so glad. Well, guess what? Few, if any, homeowners are going to get any mortgage relief out of this thing. And I would imagine all $700 billion could be spent by January 20th, 2009. Taxpayers, you're going to get little or no equity upside. It's just not going to happen. Any meaningful regulatory reform proposal is going to be subject to filibuster, delay, or dilution. It's just not going to happen. I've talked with seemingly intelligent people, and they tell me, well, Rick, we had to do something. We just have to do something. Well, sometimes doing something is worse than doing nothing. Section 134 of the bailout bill merely says that the president must submit a revenue bill to Congress in 2013 that recoups from the financial industry the taxpayers' net losses. What's that mean? It means no taxpayer is going to see any recouping of the cost that has just been spent. You just lost $700 billion, all right? So you might as well go to the Indian casino tonight, or if you're in Vegas, go to the Strip, because you couldn't do any worse than the government did for you this afternoon. If the president has any revenue idea he actually likes, he has to submit them to Congress anyway. If the president submits revenue ideas only because he's forced to by Section 134, then he'll send it back to them again. You forget it. I love Bill Clinton the other day. Well, you know, we could actually make money on this. Well, I don't know what your idea of investment is. To me, it's not the $700 billion bailout to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We have been shot in the Fannie Mae, and it doesn't feel very good. These new insurance provisions are meaningless because they won't be used. Hundreds of billions are going to be used to buy toxic assets currently held by foreign investors. That makes sense. And I know a lot has been talked about, well, the Boy Scouts wooden arrow thing, and all this, what, $100 million or whatever it is to rum producers overseas. Look, $58 billion is about what it costs to buy these congressmen, to get them to change their votes. And they've all got some story to tell. What was the one today? Well, I couldn't look at my grandchildren when they come around and say I was the one that didn't bail out America. Well, this, you know, these guys are so narcissistic. This is our money and your screw up. It's like a bank robber stealing the money from the bank, then calling up each individual depositor and saying, listen, you're going to need to give me more money back so I can put it back in the bank so you can get paid off on your FDIC insurance. I mean, this is stupid. Then if you're a homeowner, you're not going to get any mortgage relief. That's not going to happen. All right. I want to take your calls because there's a couple of things I want to talk about. Obviously, the Palin-Biden debate, it was sort of like watching a PTA mom go against an old political war horse. I've got nothing against Palin. She seems like a very nice woman. And it is kind of refreshing to see somebody that hasn't been tainted by the stink that is so pervasive inside the Beltway. Biden is just an arrogant ass. I don't like him. I never have. I understand he speaks a different language, which is, read my lips. What is, what does that mean? And, they say something, they leave one key phrase out, which throws it to a completely different meaning. I just don't understand the political language of Washington because I don't want to. And the guy has a very, very tough time being totally forthright with the American people. Even last night, I counted 14 different things he said that in 14 different instances, it was just simply not true. It was just simply not true. And she did a pretty good job. I thought she did an okay job. So we'll take your calls about that. But I just can't believe, we got sold out to the degree we did after defeating this thing last Monday. And a lot of that defeat came came with your phone calls and your emails and saying, you know, I didn't sign up for this. You know, I didn't make this mess. And if some of these banks are going to fail, then they're going to fail. And guess what? A lot of these banks are going to fail with this bailout bill. You know, I was talking to someone the other day, and they said, oh, well, you know what, this will happen, and the sky is falling, and George Bush told me that we'll all be on the street corner selling apples and pencils just to boil a sneaker for dinner for the family. I mean, it was all gloom and doom, and oh, my God, we'll lose everything. Well, that was just simply not true. But a gullible America bought it. They bought it. They just kept hammering away at the American people until they found an advertising program that would work. And that's exactly what happened with this. All right. I'm going to go to your calls. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK. Sacramento, Theodore. Theodore, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, Theodore.
Yes, thank you. If you listen very carefully, Nancy Pelosi's laugh sounds exactly like a person drunk with power.
Or a person heavily medicated. You're right. I watched and I listened to the whole thing. Many times I will have the television on. Sometimes the visual helps you, Theodore. Sometimes turning away from the visual and listening critically is even better. That's what I do. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. This woman, well, how many times do we have to say Pelosi is not representative of the American people? I don't know who she represents, quite frankly. I watched that this morning, then I turned away from it and listened. I'm so used to having headphones on 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, that I find that if I turn away from the television and listen, I pick up much more than I do with the visual. And I think you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. Connecticut, Stan. Stan, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, Stan.
Yes, Rick. How are you?
Very well.
Looks like, you know, what I was thinking about, that, you know, Bush's term is ending now, so maybe Hank Paulson is getting himself a golden parachute. You know what I mean?
Oh, Paulson's parachute has been packed and in the car since this whole thing began. He's just been trying to figure out a way that he can gracefully walk away from this thing, still with the golden parachute and still with access to come back and go out and come back and go out. And you're not far off the mark, my friend. You're not far off the mark. All right, more of your calls straight ahead, 1-800-449-TALK, 1-800-449-8255. It's just disgusting. It's a sad day for America. You know, my daughter, God love her, she's like 22, and she was, explain this to me, Dad, and explain this to me. And I said, honey, at the end of the day, I don't know how many different ways I can tell you the government does not always represent the people. The government represents itself. They realize that whatever their agenda is, if it's packaged, promoted, and presented properly to the people, the American people will buy it. And this is no exception. But, Dad, that's not right. I know, sweetheart, that's not right. My son, same thing. You know, it's, and I don't know how you explain this to your kids. You know, I suppose if there were a ship in the harbor, we could all get together tonight and start throwing tea overboard, if nothing, for no other reason than to make ourselves feel better. This is an abomination. This is unconscionable. And you know what? I know I got to stop here for just a second, but at the end of the day, I think about all those troops with boots on the ground fighting for American interest in overseas. They deserve better than what happened to their homeland this afternoon. And I feel bad that we weren't able to hold the line for them. I truly do. All right, we'll take your calls. 1-800-449-TALK. This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Under the leadership of our chairman, Barney Frank, as I called him on the floor, and Maestro, we were able to make improvements, working in a bipartisan way, to make improvements in the legislation and then make more improvements to the legislation before it came back to the floor today.
Oh,
but our eye now is to the future, to shine the bright light of accountability on what is happening in our financial markets so that it doesn't happen again. That accountability will tell us how we got to this place and ferret out the abuses.
Stop. If this were not actually happening, it would be absolutely hilarious. Nancy Pelosi calling Barney Frank a maestro. Well, I will say this. He has orchestrated perhaps one of the biggest scams on the American taxpayer that I have ever seen in my adult life. So maybe she's correct. But this accountability, shine a bright light of day on how this happened. And over this happened because I wish I could tie Pelosi and Frank down to a chair. Well, Barney Frank would like that. But at least make him stand still long enough to listen to audio tape of himself not that long ago in 2005 saying, no, there's no crisis. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, no, they're fine. This sky is falling mentality isn't helpful to anyone. There's no crisis. And even if there was, the government's not going to bail them out. Just stop it. Let's move on. He said that. I've got it on tape. I've played it to look the American people in the eye. And she doesn't really look us in the eye. She sort of looks above us. Because if she were to look us in the eye, she would probably turn to stone and say, well, boy, this is not going to happen again because we're going to make sure that the people responsible, you are the people responsible. All right. This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it each and every time. This is the Savage Nation. I want you to go to michaelsavage.com. Michaelsavage.com. A lot of information there. Sometimes the information comes so fast and so furious, it's hard to find it in a very concise manner. You'll find it at michaelsavage.com. Also, Michael's book, Psychological Nudity, the fifth book Michael has written. The previous four, all bestsellers. This one, I'm sure, will be a bestseller as well. At least that's what all of the people in that type of business are saying. Hey, he's destined to be his fifth bestseller. Psychological Nudity. As a matter of fact, let's see. I think Michael said it was okay to give a book or two away, didn't he? Yeah. Sue, what's your favorite story coming out in Michael Savage's new book?
Hi there. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, what's your favorite story, Sue?
Louie and the Monkey.
All right, I want you to stand by for just a second. I'm going to put a copy of Michael Savage's new book in your hand. Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Psychological nudity. Psychological nudity. No, I'm not talking about what Barney Frank does when he's sitting there getting ready to vote. I'm talking about Michael Savage's fifth bestseller, destined to be the fifth bestseller Michael's had. He's had four previous books, every single one of them bestseller status. Psychological Nudity, a collection of 75 stories, some of which you've heard right here on the Savage Nation. Others maybe you missed or you got portions of. It's a great read. If you want to find out more about it, go to michaelsavage.com. You need to take some time and go there today anyway. Michaelsavage.com and get a copy of Psychological Nudity. We'll try to get another copy away. Michael thinks that. He said that's fine, isn't it? Okay, good, good. 1-800-449-TALK, 1-800-449-8255. I wish I had some words of comfort for you, but I don't. Other than it's going to get much, much worse before it gets any better. Joe in San Diego. Joe, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Rick, we usually only spend about a year or so campaigning during a lame duck administration. Not this time. 6 years ago, funded by a very few, very wealthy people, newspapers, liberal TV, liberal movies have been preaching disaster. This time it's jumped up and bit them on the butt. We've tried bailouts before. Farm, air, rail, auto. Nothing's ever worked. Now they say it's homes, but it's really not. What it is is paper. It can't work. There's nothing there. Until we start getting the truth, I don't know what we're going to do.
The reason I find this such an abomination is because it is so blatantly obvious, Joe. The American taxpayer, yeah, there were a few people that took advantage of a derailed system that was out of control. And I, you know, I've gone through the timeline going back to the dark days of the Carter administration, where this all began with the Community Reinvestment Act and then moving it forward. And of course, it just gained momentum and gained momentum and gained momentum. And why? Because everybody was making do-re-mi off of it. That's why. And I've told you that. But I guess I find this so sinister, so absolutely un-American, because once again, you've gone back to the American taxpayer to soak them dry when this is not our fault. This is more of a government problem than it even is a Wall Street problem. And the media, you're absolutely on point. The media has a lot of blame to share in this, you know, with the scare tactic and the tactics and the sky is falling. You know, what does the media not get about this? You would think if anyone understood socialism and the rise of communism, journalists would understand that. You would think that the television and radio and newspapers would understand the rise of communism, the rise of socialism. But they play right into it every single time. They play right into the liberal press is unbelievably biased, and it's like, wait a minute, didn't you guys read the end of the book? You lose. You end up being controlled by the same people you're touting right now. What part of that do you not get? Do you think you're 10 feet tall and bulletproof and somehow you're above the fray? Yes, I have this journalistic desire within me and you see I will not. No, here's the bottom line. At the end of the day, when socialism takes root, it takes control of the media. It takes control of the lending institutions. Sound familiar? It takes control of educating our youth. It takes control of your very existence. And it's like the media, it's first day of school for them. They don't understand what this new toy. What is this new toy I've got? It's bright and it's shiny and it makes noise. And let's talk about it. Let's write about it. Take some pictures. It's called socialism. And if you play with it long enough, it will devour you. You would think they would understand that. Obviously, they do not. Hawaii, Mike, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Rick. Hey, you know, I've kind of noticed that every time our country enters into a controversial situation, you know, the Congress, they can't make up their mind, and the media, they inundate us with their stupid polls. But, you know, something, for some reason, I didn't really see that this time, and I'm wondering why. I didn't see any polls taken. I didn't see the media trying to, you know, with their common schemes, or trying to, you know, persuade us into a certain position or trying to divide us. But,
I think after last Monday, because quite honestly, the Beltway was turned on its ear by the American people, as President Bush was with his blanket amnesty bill. Good folks trying to put food on their family, doing jobs Americans won't do. You remember the whole Bush Unplugged tour, coast to coast. He wanted to push amnesty. The American people pushed back and said no. They inundated every elected official's office with emails, phone calls, so on and so forth, and they were taken aback. Well, they were taken aback on Monday, too. They couldn't believe that the American people actually had the audacity to stand up to an elected official when I venture to say 90% of you are just as intelligent or more intelligent than somebody up there that calls themselves a congressman or assemblyman or senator or what have you. You saw after that. And it started off very slow, and it gained momentum up to this morning. The scare tactics, the Bush Great Depression talk, all of this began to gather steam. And all the alphabet channels, and many of the cable channels as well, they sort of got away from yesterday's news, which was the American people, one, the American government, zero. And they started going in the direction of, well, you know, if we don't do something without calling it the bill, if we don't do something, we're going to lose our retirement benefits. We're going to lose our insurance. You know, if I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times. Well, Joe Blow went down to buy a new car yesterday and couldn't get a loan because of this. Bull crap. You know, I have challenged people. Give me one example of how, what are you, going to Bob's Bank or Billy and Earl's Bank? What? I'm sorry. It is so blatantly obvious to me that the American people were pushed to the back of the bus, to turn a phrase, Mike. And I did see this building since last Monday. It began last Tuesday, and it built slowly, and it was very well produced. And it was one of those things where it built up steam and built up steam and built up steam until I was talking with people that ordinarily I find quite intelligent and quite objective. Even they were saying, well, I guess we need to do something. You knew right then when they said we have to do something, the fix was in. And the fix, Mike, was about $150 billion worth of sweet and low and a very bitter cup of coffee. That's what it was. That's why 58 congressmen crossed the line. You know, we made it just sweet enough for them, whether it's, you know, helping out the rum distilleries or, you know, the bow and arrow boys or whatever it happened to be. Everybody got a little something. And that's the insidious part of our government. James in New York. James, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, James.
Hello, Rick. The Republicans, and that is my party, have absolutely lost their minds. I got to be honest with you. I've been trying to find some reason to be able to drag myself into that voting booth and pull that lever for John McCain. And let me tell you something. He voted for this bill. He has just lost my vote. Michael, bless his heart, is the one person who's not defending him on this. How can you call yourself fiscally responsible? How can you call yourself a fiscal conservative and vote for this piece of garbage?
All right, well, you can't, James, and you will not find people doing that in the same breath. Here's my take on it. John McCain is no conservative. And that's why, you know, as Bush fragmented the Republican Party and pushed the conservative base away while he was shopping for Hispanics or whatever he was doing, McCain has pretty much done the same thing. I'm voting for John McCain for one reason and one reason only. I don't want a socialist in the White House surrounding himself with communists. That's the only reason. The lesser of two evils, the lesser of two poisons, I don't know, fill in the blank. I'm voting for John McCain because I don't think this country could take 4 years of Barack Obama, and not just Barack Obama, but everyone he is surrounded by. I don't think we could. Now, you can't defend McCain on this, and McCain was for this, Bush was for this, Barack Obama was, everybody was for this, right? Very few people had the wherewithal to stand up and say, no, I'm not doing this to the American people. There was too much politically at stake here. And when I say too much politically, I'm not talking about the voters. I'm talking about the connections. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake. It should be crystal clear to everyone in the Savage Nation. The federal government and Wall Street are joined at the hip. You're not going to get rid of one without getting rid of the other. And one is not going to go one way and the other go a different direction. They are going to be together. And that is why John McCain, I can't defend him on his immigration amnesty plan. I can't defend him on being fiscally responsible. I can't defend him on many issues. I can just say I fear him less than Barack Obama and what he may or may not do to this country. Does that make sense, James?
It makes a certain amount of sense. But I got to tell you, Rick, I was actually proud of the House Republicans. And quite frankly, even though they had sinister reasons for doing it, the Democrats had actually voted against us and said, no, screw you, we're not going along with this. And then all of a sudden, because the stock market went down a little bit, yeah, point-wise, it was big. But in percentage terms, it wasn't even in the top 10.
Well, look at have you watched the Dow today since this bailout was passed?
Down 150-plus points. That's my point. I was like, all of a sudden, and once the Senate did what they did, I said, that's it, done. It's going to go to the House, and it's going to pass. And once McCain came out and said, okay, I'm going along with this, in my view, and maybe you'll disagree, he gave the Republicans now a free pass.
Oh, of course he did. Of course he did, James. And don't forget this. The economy, even more so than the war on terror, is a huge, huge issue in this political election cycle. And all of the similarities drawn between Bush and McCain and Bush, by very effectively, by the way, by the Democratic Party, this was a thorn in McCain's side leading up to the November 4th election. Had this economy been hanging over McCain's head and Bush's head, he would have lost for sure. I don't know that he's going to win now. But this, I believe, perhaps even more than the connections with Wall Street, was a way to get this thing behind him and say, okay, look, I showed up. I tried to work a deal on behalf of the American people. Barack Obama was out there, wherever he was, basically swooning and crooning to the adoring audience. You know, I'm a roll up my sleeves, do something kind of guy. The American people needed this. I came here. I brokered a deal. They went back to the campaign and they hashed it out. James, this was about an election as much as it was about brokering any type of deal for a lending institution to be able to stay solvent. This was about a Republican win to the Republicans. That's what this was about. I truly, truly, truly believe that. James, I appreciate the call. Florida, John. John, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, John.
Hey, you know, anytime the Democrats and Republicans get together on something, you know the taxpayer is about to get raped. Last time it happened, it was the amnesty thing.
Yep.
This time they got it through, but this is, along with socialism, this is also just cronyism. You've got a bunch of crooked politicians taking care of crooked bankers and investment so-called professionals because they're in an unholy alliance, and they have been ever since the central banks were established. The money just went down a rat hole. It's not going to fix what's wrong. Look at the drop in the Dow today. And the big problem that we have is not necessarily needing a bailout of people that are overextended. We're in a bad economic model. We're following this mantra of John Maynard Keynes, wrongheaded, and we've got these principles of government intervention and debt-based economies. I'm sorry, you cannot borrow your way to prosperity, and it's crazy because also these big corporations, they love socialist cultures because the workers are placid, they're easy to control, they don't want a lot of money.
Well, they love the socialist model of a workforce for the same reasons that politicians love dumb constituencies, uneducated constituencies. That's why the Democrats are so big in some of these areas where, well, I mean, let's be honest, Maxine Waters doesn't preside over, an area where a lot of Rhodes Scholars live. And I'm not throwing stones at anybody, but that's the truth. That's the truth. Politicians love uneducated constituencies, and big corporations love socialist models in the workforce because it works for them. It's all business. John, very good call. Very good call indeed. It is a reality, and things are going to be bad. We're probably still going to be in a recession. We never were going to be in a depression. That was a scare tactic used to get this thing passed. And it has to break your heart as an American to look at this and go, how many of my fellow Americans can be this stupid? But by the same token, you say, Rick, I made the calls. I did the emails. What was it? Feinstein. Did you hear what this piece of work said? Well, I received 93,000 emails, 80,000 of which were against this bill. I can only assume that they simply looked at the first bill in the three pages and didn't know what was there and weren't sure about what was going on. So I decided to go ahead and ignore 80,000 of my constituents to do what I wanted to do and what was politically expedient for me. Now, if that's not a socialist mentality, I don't know what is. You know, this thing went from 3.5, just about 4 pages to 402 pages. Now, you tell me what's wrong here. You know, John's got it right. Anytime the Democrats and Republicans get together to form a united front, you better dig in because you're in for a fight. This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you. You're on the Savage Nation. Savage.
Ninety-one 91,000 phone calls and emails from California. 85,000 of them opposed to this measure. There's a great deal of confusion out there. People don't understand it. What was printed most prominently was the original Paulson proposal, a proposal which gave one man control over $700 billion to dispense as he chose above the law with no administrative view or legislative oversight.
Okay, that, ladies and gentlemen, is Dianne Feinstein from California. Even though out of 91,000 phone calls and emails, she dismisses 85,000 of them as confused. If that is not political elitism, I don't know what is. That is political elitism. Well, 85,000 of you are confused. Go on. There's nothing to see here. Keep going. Go on, go on, go on. Okay. And that's why we're in the mess we're in, because of that mentality right there, that dismissive mentality that somehow, some way, by hook or crook, they're more intelligent than you are. And I submit anybody listening to the Savage Nation is more intelligent and it possesses more common sense, and many times that's what is needed in these particular situations, than Dianne Feinstein could ever hope to be. Dick in New York. Dick, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Rick, hi. I think I have a little intelligence myself. These guys have not addressed the fact, well, this money is going to China and to Russia. So if you take, they own 60% of this money, which is the debt that is all in all this paper, is going overseas. You mean to tell me that nobody can figure this out down there? I mean, we're giving away money to people who are sweating. They were sweating. We weren't going to pay them back. We had them right where we want them, and now we're giving it all back to them. We're nuts. They have no intelligence, never mind the American public.
Dick, under this bill, the administration can buy any asset from any financial institution for any price. Now, some think that only U.S. investors are going to be bailed out. That's not the case. Michael told you the truth. I told you the truth. Major, major foreign investors have already been assured that they can benefit from the bailout. Under this bill, the Bank of China can sell a portfolio of toxic assets to a U.S.-headquartered investment bank on Monday, and the investment bank can then sell those same assets to the Treasury on Tuesday. And in something, I don't read Chinese, but I trust people that do. The foreign financial press is already saying that foreign investors are now estimating they're going to get tens of billions of dollars out of this bailout. This is absolutely, absolutely the worst thing I've ever seen. This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you, sir. On the Savage Nation, don't forget michaelsavage.com. Savage.